episode of Revolution Rosies. I'm Betty LaRue.
And I am Vivian Vega.
Come with us through the 50s to the 70s to visit some of our favorite badass women in history.
On season one of Revolution Rosies.
We're going to be talking about people that have influenced us, women that you may not have heard of, some women that you have heard of, women that played a big part in the changing of the world and the U.S. as we know it now.
Why don't you go ahead and go first, Betty?
All right, I guess I'm going first this week. So I'm starting off with one of my favorite badass women. She is just all around awesome. Her name is Avril Shaw. She was born Avril Joy Christie on February 9th of 1931 to Donald E. and Genevieve Christie of Carmel, Indiana. Her parents noticed in her at a very young age that she was very interested and talented artistically. After high school, she attended Butler University and John Herron School of Art, but left without a degree to form her own company, Avril Arts Associates.
What'd she do there?
She was doing cards and just kind of art things, so like almost like greeting cards and arts and that sort of thing. This was 1948. She was a master of self-branding, so she was branding herself as big person to know in the arts community. And she was a woman and only 17 when she formed her first company.
Whoa.
Yeah. In 1951, she married Robert Shaw. Robert Shaw was a columnist and one of the first TV critics. Their wedding was featured in Life magazine, and it is one of the reasons why I love her, is this picture from Life magazine and their wedding.
Oh my God.
She's so amazing.
Look at her.
Yeah, every piece
so
of her.
She's so sassy.
She's so sassy. Look at this jacket
she's
and the ruffle.
She's missing like a cigar.
Oh my God.
That's all she's missing.
And this will go up on our Instagram page so you guys can see this, but there is so much amazement. So in this amazing picture, she's got this like huge ruffled collar that's like flipped up. She's given like a wink and like a half smile. She's in this gorgeous, what is it? Is this satin? What is this fabric?
Probably satin or
it's
silk
like a satin,
or something. Something fancy.
Button down jacket that's with these bell sleeves at the bottom and this huge like
Veil.
It's beautiful.
It looks like a bird on her head.
It looks almost like a bird on her head.
Oh,
it's so cute. Now we're looking at a picture of her and her husband at their wedding. She is just a fun, spunky woman.
I want that whole outfit.
I want that dress so bad. It was a jacket, so she takes it off, and then she's got these, like cute little sleeves.
Victorian meets modern 50s. It's pretty cool.
And she was super high fashion. So in 1951, she marries Robert Shaw. They are a power couple known around their circles as Av and Archie.
Oh my God.
Which is really cute.
It's like the first Bennifer.
It was like the first Bennifer. Quickly after her marriage, though, she turned her attention to architecture and interior design. Specifically, she was interested in mid-century modern homes. And in 1954, she completed her first home, the Golden Unicorn.
That's what it's called, huh?
It's called the Golden Unicorn.
She's one of us.
She is one of us. It was named for a unicorn that she placed on the exterior wall.
Oh, my
because
gosh.
She is amazing. like, there's nothing better. She incorporated, like, streamlined interiors, casual living space, decorated with the latest trends of the time. So you had, like, the hairpin legs to the couches. And she even incorporated stainless steel appliances.
Ooh.
In 1954.
Good for her.
Yeah. Keep in mind, she was doing this in the 50s in Indiana. So Indiana at the time was predominantly conservative and very traditional when it came to housing.
So exactly as it is
now.
Now.
Yeah, so what Avril was doing was what you would see on the West Coast, and it was just becoming a big deal on the West Coast. And she was still living in Indiana, and this is where she wanted to build her legacy. And so to continue to do this and to interest the housing market in her housing designs, she designed some houses, sent them to the FHA, and was able to get three home designs approved for the housing boom after World War II. So they, wow. People were be able, they would be able to buy her homes with their FHA loans after World War II.
Wow.
So pretty brilliant businesswoman. And at the time, again, she was only 24, 25.
Whoa. Oh, my God.
Yeah. So once she got the FHA to approve three home designs in 1956, she started what is her best-known legacy, which was Thornhurst Edition. Mm. So Thornhurst Edition was this big housing complex kind of area. And she had no college degree. She was not licensed. She wasn't a licensed architect. So to build these homes, she had to have other architects sign off on her designs and be like, these are sound. They're not going to fall down. Wow. So she was like, I don't give a shit that I'm not.
I wonder if that still flies now.
Probably not.
Probably not. But good for you, Avril.
Right? 1956, Indiana.
It wasn't a big problem.
They didn't give a shit. So, yeah. So she had to have other people sign off on her designs, but she did have a on-hands approach to her project. So Avril was known for laying her own stones outside the house and, you know, some of the stoning work for the house. She was also known for painting murals on the walls of the houses or in the walls of the houses because she would build the houses and then she would decorate the inside.
Because she liked the interior design.
Yeah, she was an original Sims creator. She built her entire neighborhood.
Shit, that was a really good like callback from childhood. Good job.
Thanks.
Good job.
Actually, a carpenter that once worked with her was quoted as saying that she swore like a lumberjack and showed up for work in a bikini and a tool belt.
I mean, you're gonna get hot.
It's hot work. It's hot work. She's laying her own stones.
The Midwest is no joke.
No, it's not. In the summertime, it's miserable.
It's the worst.
It is. Absolutely.
Probably not the worst, but it's really bad.
I mean, I could live without the humidity and all of the winter. So,
let's move.
It's time to go. But there are also multiple stories about her. And she would drop off at people's homes that had bought homes. And even if they were long-term residents, she would stop off at the house and be like, I found this lamp that has to go in your living room. And then she would become, like obviously annoyed when she found out that people that were living in the houses were decorating to a taste that she was not approving
that they
of.
Liked.
Yeah. She's like, I'm sorry. I built this beautiful home for you, and you're going to do what? What is up with all these antlers? I mean, I get it.
I hate shag carpeting. Oh, my God.
I know it's almost the 60s, but don't give me shag carpeting.
Please. I know you think you're being innovative, and you probably are. Yeah. But
so, in 1960, she gave birth to her first daughter, Bambi.
Bambi?
I love it. It's so cute.
Do you think it was named after the actual Bambi?
After the movie?
It came out probably around the same time.
Absolutely. Oh, my God. Is her first daughter named after a cartoon character? I mean, like, it makes sense. Do you know how many Elsies we have now?
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, it's about the same thing.
Cool.
And I also want to point out that, okay, so Avril, in, you know, like, the 50s, got married at 20 and didn't give birth to her first child till she was 29.
Yeah.
Because she was like, Robert, hold up. This door's not open until I accomplish something.
I did the opposite. I got pregnant on the first date and was like, well, let's ride this one out. Let's see how this turns out.
I mean, it worked out for you, though. It worked out.
Thank goodness.
Sometimes you just gotta, like,
good job, Avril. You're just making us all look bad.
She's kind of badass, but it's also badass to be able to be like, give a fuck, I'm just going to give birth.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have an amazing child, and I'm still going to be a rock star.
I didn't name my kid Bambi.
No, you named him after the street he was conceived on.
No.
No, wait, that's not right.
It would have been if it was a girl.
Oh, that's right.
But I digress. Let's keep talking about Avril.
So anyways, I just am really impressed that in the 1950s, she gets married at 20 and still waits till she's 29 to have her first child.
Pop them right out.
And then, by 1965, so 5 years after Bambi is born, she starts her next project, Ladywood Estate.
Ladywood?
I love it. Yeah, so she starts Ladywood Estate. And in 1966, so 1 year later, she gives birth to her second daughter, September.
September.
I know, she's such a hippie.
It's like, she's like, I'm really taking the 60s.
She's like, I'm I'm an artist.
Absorbing them.
Yeah, I would like you guys to know that I'm an artist, Bambi that I do artsy
September.
Stuff.
I wonder what Bambi and September are up to these days.
You know what? I've thought about looking them up a few times. I might be creepy, though, and contact them, and
yeah.
It would be uncomfortable, and I would probably do it, and so I've kept myself away.
I'll do it.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Find out what they're up to so I don't stalk them.
Yeah, I'll look them up.
So, sadly, Avril Christie Shaw's career and badass attitude were lived shortly. She died in 1976. She was only 45 years old.
Yikes.
She died of complications from diabetes.
Oh.
Yeah. She had finished her last home 5 years earlier. So she just worked.
Those damn 70s, I tell you.
Oh my God, right? The 70s kill everyone.
They do.
So in all though, Avril had built 21 homes, as well as restaurants, an apartment building, and she has sold hundreds of her housing designs. So houses that she just designed are all over the country. Mm. And in 2010, Thornhurst Addition, her like pride and joy, was listed on the National Register of Historic Places for mid-century modern architecture and for being the work of a master builder.
Oh, that's amazing.
Right?
That's amazing.
Yes. So that is the story of Avril Christie Shaw, the college dropout, short-tempered, Midwestern designer, businesswoman, architect, and entrepreneur.
I love it.
Yeah. She is one of my favorite badass women.
Way to kick it off.
Thank you.
Way to kick it off.
I am very excited to put up all of her pictures on our Instagram page because
She's so cute.
I fell in love with her. When I saw that picture, I was enamored, and I've been obsessed with her ever since.
How did you find her?
So I had been buying these magazines called Atomic Ranch. So they were about mid-century modern ranch homes.
And Lord, there's a whole magazine about...
Yeah, mid-century modern ranch homes.
So, tell me more, Betty.
So I actually have a few magazines here in the house. I love reading them. I love architecture. It's just something that I really enjoy kind of looking into. It's nothing that I know a whole lot about, but so I'd been buying these magazines, and she was featured, and Thornhurst Edition was featured, and that picture I showed of you of her wedding was in there, and I was...
You're like, I need this.
I need her in my life so bad.
Let's start a podcast.
I'm not gonna lie, I bought that magazine probably 10 years ago, and I've been obsessed with her ever since. Every time somebody's like, you know, name an awesome woman or anything, I'm like, Avril Shaw, no one knows who she is, and she is such a badass, let me tell you.
I had no idea who she was.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
She's pretty awesome. Yeah.
You're doing well. You're doing real well for yourself there, Betty.
Well, Viv,
yeah?
Who'd you bring along today?
All right. So mine may be a little bit more well-known, but still not. Still a little throwing a rock in the dark and hoping to hit some bad guy. Okay, so I'm doing Patti Smith. She has been called many things, but a gorgeous woman was not one. And that's unfortunate because she is the best poet that's ever existed. And she is beautiful. So, Patti Smith was born Patricia Lee Smith on December 30th, 1949. Her parents were upset because she came a day too early. Because if you leave the hospital on New Year's Day, back in those days, they gave you a fridge.
What?
To take home.
So they were mad that
they were pissed off because they left on New Year's Eve instead of on New Year's Day. So they're
kind
like
of incentive were the 1940s.
I mean, look, they had so few people back then compared to now. they're like, let's just give them a fucking fridge.
Yeah, you're lucky enough to get booties.
They're like, you know what? It's Chicago. Fuck that cap that we usually give babies in December. We're going to give them a fridge. So she was born in Chicago, but they moved around a lot, so eventually found themselves in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, that kind of East Coasty area. She was a scrawny little tomboy as a kid. She was the oldest of four, so she used to go out and play like war with her brothers and sisters, and they would fight the neighbor kids, and it was just a big pile of fun because nobody gave a shit about the kids. They were like, go play,
don't come back until the sun goes down.
I don't even want to see your face until then.
No. But sadly, I'm going to put sandwiches out on the front porch.
I mean, listen, guys, I'll give you lemonade for you and your friends. But at about the age of 8 or 9, She contracted scarlet fever and was quarantined in her home for, like, a year.
In the 50s?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
That was still a thing.
Well, for Patti Smith, it was. She's a rebel.
She's like, whatever.
She's like, I am born to be different. So as a family, like I mentioned, they had moved around a lot. They finally settled in what they called the Patch. It was like barren land in southern Jersey. And she's known for saying that she grew up harder than Bruce Springsteen. Because they eventually became friends, her and Bruce Springsteen. And she would be like, oh, your Jersey's nothing like my Jersey, Bruce Springsteen. Don't even sing about it. Just give
your
up
Jersey
now.
Your Jersey is the soft it's Jersey.
Like, listen here, New Jersey. You got New York, New Jersey. I got Jersey Shore, New Jersey. So she began college. She lived through scarlet fever. I just skipped over that.
Oh,
I
didn't see that coming.
Yeah,
thank you for that twist.
Shocking.
Right?
She did not write Because the Night when she was 9 years old.
Oh, I'm really glad.
That'd
I'm
be
really
weird,
glad.
A weird song for a 9-year-old. Anyways, she began college at 17. She wanted to be a teacher. Actually, she didn't want to be a teacher, but her dad was like, hey, Patty, this is not me just saying it. He said, you're not the best looking person, so you may want to be a career woman because you're not probably going to get married.
Oh my God.
The 50s. I guess early 60s. Yeah. Still the same. They were loving parents though. Don't get me wrong. But they
just
didn't
think she was that pretty. Maybe.
Maybe try teaching.
Maybe you should learn some things since you ain't that pretty.
Maybe you should teach. So at the age of 19, she became pregnant with a kid who was 17, this boy in, like, the town where she went to college. She quickly let him go and was like, you don't want to fuck with this. Go away. And she knew that she wasn't fit to be a mom, so she told her parents. They were supportive of her, but the neighborhood she was in was very not supportive of it and was giving them a lot of grief. So she moved in with the family that she was going to give her child to. So she obviously gave her up for adoption. It was a girl. I have no idea what happened to this girl. I don't know what her name became. I don't know any of that. She doesn't know any of that. She was like, this family is way totally worth it. Here you go.
Well, that's very cool.
Surprisingly enough, though, the parents that she gave the child to were, like, these artists, like, hippie people, which she eventually basically became. Anyways, so it's like, you would have probably been a pretty decent mom then, but her life was super fucking
rad. She just wasn't ready for it.
Not ready, because she eventually had kids. We'll talk about that later. So she decided, after giving up the child for adoption, she's like, college really isn't my thing. When I was taken off for this pregnancy, I didn't want to go back. I didn't miss it. I didn't like it. So she moved to New York City with, like, $5 and, like, a satchel. And, like, that's
I am so impressed with people like
that. I love it.
I love people like that.
I love it.
They're just like, I'm just gonna go and do it. And I'm like, but how?
I know. So when she got there, she had no idea what she was doing. So she slept on stoops and she slept on park benches, you know, the norm that you do.
What you do,
I guess. But she eventually got a job at a bookstore, and she was, like, selling jewelry at this, like, little counter. They had, you know, like, little trinkets and things, and she was obsessed with this one necklace. It had, Persian scroll all over it, and she was, like, obsessed. It was, like, the thing she would stare at every day, like, okay, this is why I come to work. This beautiful piece of art.
Like, I want.
I need this, but I'm broke as hell. So one day, this super pretty, gorgeous boy comes in, and he has these beautiful soft curls and, like, these tight pants, and he's, like, super hippy-dippy, but, like, pre-Summer of Love hippie, like, cool, dark hippie, you know? But this boy ends up being, like, a super pivotal part of her life. His name is Robert Mapplethorpe. Now, have you read Just Kids? You've not read
No,
it.
I have not just
So I brought it because I've read it only, what, like 8 to 10
times? I've seen that you've
read
it a few
Just
times.
Kids is about her life with Robert Mapplethorpe. He's super gorgeous. Aww. I love their story. It's the most poetic book in the world. Read Just Kids. So he actually comes into the store and buys the necklace that she's obsessed with. And she slips up and says, just like a teenage girl would, like, don't give that necklace to anybody but me. You know, and she, like, later regretted it. Like, oh, fuck, what did I do?
Why did I say that?
What did I do? Oh, my God, that's so embarrassing. But he kept coming back. He kept coming back to see her. They became, like, super fast friends. And, you know, he realized, like, she's living on the streets. I'm living on the streets, but I do have friends. I've been living on the streets forever. I know my way around the city at this point. So he ends up taking her to a friend's house that he usually stays at. They begin dating pretty seriously. Though they had nothing, they had their art together. He was an artist. She was an artist. They both painted. They both drew. They both did collages. He once gifted her a portfolio at the same time she gifted him a portfolio for their anniversary.
That's so cute.
Isn't that beautiful?
That is like the gift of the Magi, but like better.
It is. And so his was bound in black silk with a black silk ribbon. Hers was purple silk with a black silk ribbon.
That's so cute.
And so eventually they're moving around so much that they're like, fuck our belongings. All we're going to take with us are these portfolios. And our art and our love for one another. So they eventually make it to my favorite place in the whole world, the Chelsea Hotel in New York City.
Oh, the Chelsea.
Where Sid and Nancy lived.
And died.
And she died she there.
Died. She died there.
Sorry, Nance. I would have talked about her, but I feel
How
like
How did they
that's
end
just...
up at the Chelsea, though? I feel like...
So the reason they ended up at the Chelsea was they were living in... a place where a guy literally died outside their door.
Okay.
And Robert's like, oh, fuck that. We're not doing that. We're getting out of here. So they climbed down the fire escape
to their house?
Away from this apartment that they were living
in. Oh, God.
That's how bad it was. He had went to San Francisco while she went to Paris earlier that same year. And she got there and she experienced this magical awakening of her art, of her, like, she got to see buskers on the side of the street. She got to see all this stuff, but she found out Brian Jones had died while she was there, and that was, like, her hero. Like, she's like, oh my God, Brian Jones is from the Rolling Stones. In case you don't know it, I'm not belittling you. Everybody listens to podcasts for different reasons. I don't know yours. Anyways, Brian Jones died while she was there. She came back real depressed. Something in her was like, I don't know what happened there, but something took my heart. Yep. And I think that's why she kind of carried on the way she did. We'll get to that later. But, so, they left that hotel, and he was starting to get real sick. His gums were white. He was getting dry mouth. He was feeling real sick. He was losing weight. He couldn't keep anything down. He wasn't feeling like doing his art. All of this stuff. Ooh. Turns out he had gonorrhea. He went to San Francisco. Ooh. He tried some drugs. He tried... free love. He met a guy, gave him an STD.
Oh, no.
So, and he had impacted wisdom teeth, but that's all.
Well, that might have been where it started.
Oh, it totally started there.
I was
going to
say, that's
kind of...
Oh, yeah. No.
So, owie, owie. So, she's trying to take care of him. She's working full-time at this place called Scribner's, which was in Rockefeller Center and is no longer there because New York hates everything. Anyways... fuck you!
I can think of a couple of cities like that.
Awful. So they were still in love with each other until his dying day. Mm. Madly in love with one another. Though he was gay, but he loved her because they were the same.
They were just meant to be.
Yeah. They were meant to be. But he realized, I'm putting you through all this. I'm gay, and you don't, this isn't... I think he was probably, like, one of the first, like, truly bisexual humans. Because I mean, there was probably tons of them before, but he was one that was like, I'm openly fucking Patti Smith and this rich art dude.
There was a lot of openness to be, I don't know. I will say that I think that before the whole purity thing, and then it was whispered, and it was talked about, and then it was...
But then, you know, it started coming back again, and then, but people weren't really, like, telling people. Even, like, Freddie Mercury eventually was, like, bisexual, but he was like, I'm not going to tell anybody about being bisexual, because people were more accepting about being gay than bisexual, because they'd be
because
like,
it was like,
what?
Just give me something and,
like,
tell me
I
an answer.
I
want to
know if I should hit on you or not. Like, yeah, do it. Buy me a drink.
I think that's more like people are like, I need this boundary.
That's right.
I need to know.
I need
are
a yes
you
or
yes
no.
or yes? Are you guys or girls? Are you pants or skirts? Are you
right?
And it,
right.
And it doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that.
No. And they were the perfect example. This is a love story, but like, this is not about Robert Mapplethorpe, but I'm going to toss in a little fact that while he was dying, she wasn't able to make it to him.
Oh, no.
And his brother was there and said, I kissed him for you. We're keeping him as is until you can make it here, because she was on her way.
Oh, no.
And it is, like, the most touching, heartfelt, sad, beautiful thing, because they were still so close.
Right.
You know, until, I think it was maybe, I think he died in the 90s, maybe late 80s.
Oh, so he was, he
lived a while,
oh,
yeah.
Wow.
And he was really successful. He was an artist. He took pictures of, like, erotic photos. He took, like, super artistic. I wonder if there's one in here. If there is, I'm totally posting that. And you're not stopping me.
I wouldn't. People are going to want to see it.
Listen, if I can't find it in this book, I'm going to find it
online. We'll find
online.
It online.
But, like, look at them. They're so
They're
John
so
Mellencamp meets,
cute.
Like, Natural Born Killers. But anyways, so.
I like that description. John Mellencamp.
Like,
Natural
exactly
Born
right.
It's really good.
I know. Okay, so anyways, I said they were in love until his dying day. This is where they found their true identities, was with each other. She realized, like, maybe painting and collages and things like that aren't really my thing. Maybe writing is my thing, because while she was in Paris, she was diarying all the time. Like, she's, like, you know, making poems and writing entries and doing all this stuff. So she began doing her poetry around New York City and just, like, little clubs around New York. Lenny Kaye, eventually her guitarist and her band, went to one of these poetry nights and was like, wow, she's fucking passionate as hell. Like, she's a powerhouse. I need her in my life. She was like that to everyone. Every person who encountered her was like, I don't know what it is about her, but she's got this draw that I just need. So he approached her about it and was like, hey, you know, your poetry's fucking off the chain. You should put some guitar behind it. You should do kind of like a musical-style poetry thing.
Like, and everyone hopes will happen to them one day.
I know.
Someone will
literally
just be like,
her
you know
story
what?
Is everything I want. So they eventually formed the Patti Smith Group in 1974. And in 1975, Clive Davis signed them to Arista Records. And they made their first album, Horses, which was produced by one of Patti Smith's idols, John Cale, who was in the Velvet Underground. Like, that's all of what I just said.
You're like, I want all of
is
that.
So good. And so fast. Now, granted, it was about 1969, 1970 that she started doing the poetry thing, so it was a slow build.
But wait, when did this happen? You said 1969?
74 is when she met John, well, when they formed the band. She
okay.
had met Lenny Kaye around 1970, 71. They started playing together. They formed the entire group 1974, 75 they were signed.
Okay, that's 5 years. That's not a long time.
It's not a long
time. That's no time at all.
Not a long time at all, but she had been.
I don't even want to think about what I've been doing for the last 5 years now.
But she had been. I know, it's sad.
Everyone we're talking about, we're like, and in 5 years, she had an empire.
It's like, but to be fair, she had been living in squalor for like 10 years,
so
8 years.
So I should sell my house and live on the street.
Just live on the street. Find a, like, prophetic, like,
drop out of
homeless
school,
guy
live
and
on the street.
Done and
Sounds
done.
Good.
Yeah. Also because of these poetry readings, she met a gentleman named Sam Shepard. He was, like, a Max's Kansas City regular, which is another one of my favorite establishments that's no longer there. It's a sushi shop. It's a sushi shop. So that's cool. We'll talk more about the Maxes later. They realize that they both lived in the Chelsea, Sam Shepard and Patti Smith, and she's like, hey, we should, you know, get together sometime. Well, their get-togethers ended up being that they wrote a fucking script for a play, okay? And it was called Cowboy Mouth.
I feel very connected to that
moment. I love her. So they just sat around and wrote this play called Cowboy Mouth. It was a one-time-only, in-a-warehouse play. But because of her downfall there, she realized, wow, I had the most fun I've ever had just writing with this guy. Just writing. So I think that's what made her write books and write more poetry and do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. So the photo of Patti Smith on her cover of Horses, the album we had just talked about, which was her first one, was shot in the hotel room that her and Robert lived in the Chelsea. It was Robert's jacket that she was wearing, and he had, like, a little button that he had given her.
Which we're going to have this on our Instagram.
Oh, yes. I'm totally putting this picture on there. So it was, like, this little pin. It's just really cute. She's just wearing, like, she's, like, wearing his jacket. Because he's like, do this and do this with your hair and, like, helping her out. Aww. She had just cut her hair to make it look like Keith Richards. And so
that's amazing.
Yeah. So she's like, she's got this kick-ass haircut, and it made the album and Patti herself like a feminist punk rock icon, and it shot the album up to unimaginable heights.
So it was like a leather jacket?
It's not. It's like a blazer.
Ooh.
Like a suit. So actually I do a Patti Smith burlesque number with a suit. Patti Smith, please hear this.
Please no.
Please be my best friend. Please. But anyways, so she even, like, because of that one album, she even got to play on Saturday Night Live. Brand new show. Isn't quite what it is now, but now looking back, historic.
Yeah, that's pretty fucking awesome.
So, and she got parodied on that show a lot.
That's awesome, too.
She got parodied a lot, which is, like, a super high honor in my book.
Quick question.
Yeah.
You said she had just cut her hair to look like Keith Richards, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So mullet, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very mullet.
Just making sure.
Very teased up here.
I do love that I've been seeing a lot of mullets. Like, I don't love it in a way that I'm very excited the
like
mullet's
coming
back.
Like, you would do
back. It? No. I'm loving it in a way that I'm like...
It's like, yay! History repeats itself.
In the worst way possible.
Like, I had a mullet.
No, my God.
Did you ever have a mullet?
No, I didn't have... No.
Did you have a bowl cut?
I didn't have any
what
of that.
What the fuck? Your mom is so much better than mine.
So I had the bangs that were, like, cut real big, and then my sister would tease them up here. Hugely for my
the poodle,
like, the poodle bang, like yeah, like yeah, it was yeah. the poodle bang mm-hmm, that my mm-hmm. sister would tease up for my school pictures. Girl, you don't even know though. Going back on my like junior high pictures, I had the worst haircut. I had a haircut at one point that Cherie Blondell and my friends kindly joked about it being the what I looked like a little German boy. That was the haircut.
Cute.
I will put that on our Instagram page sometime.
Please.
I begged my mother to let me do retakes, because I don't know if your school let you do retakes.
Oh, of course they did. Okay. Did I ever do that? Nah.
I begged my mother to let
me
like,
do
retakes.
I was like, this is as good as it gets.
And she was like, because I didn't realize that it was picture day the day that I went into school looking, oh my God, like this. And my mom would not let me do retakes, because she was like, it just looks like you look at this time in your life, and I just love it. And I was never more angry at my mother in my entire life.
Well, I'm really sorry. I took some real doozies, too. I once wore, like, a Native American button-up shirt.
Oh, no!
I had missing teeth. It was real classy. But anyways, back on our little mullet,
sorry,
Patti
yes.
Smith.
you said
back on
Keith
our little
Richards
mullet.
And I had to...
I know, segue. I get it.
Segue.
I get it. I
mullet.
Totally do. I totally do listen. So, eventually, in 1980, she married the absolute love of her life. Fred Sonic Smith of the MC5 out of Detroit. Kick out the drums, motherfucker! You know that song?
I don't know that I know that.
You don't know that song?
All I can think is, I'm pretty sure the presidents of the United States are playing in my head right now.
No.
Let me be who I am, and let me kick out the jams, yeah.
That's the MC5. That's an MC5 song.
So I'm thinking of a cover
yes.
of that song. I don't
God
know if
damn
I've ever
it,
heard
this
it.
Is why she's in a 90s cover band.
Sorry. Sorry, world. I apologize.
No, but I'm talking about the MC5 who's older.
I'm talking about the cover that I remember that was done by the presidents of the United States
I
in
only
the 90s.
Thought they did Peaches. Anyways,
what about Lump? Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, Lump. You'll one day have to hear Betty's version of Lump. It's the best.
I started.
It's nubs.
It's nubs.
It's nubs. They're on my toes.
Oh my God.
She's got nub toes.
They're nubs. I forgot about that. I'll never forget about that. Oh my God. That's hilarious.
So anyways, MC5, Fred Sonic Smith. Fast forward in time just a bit. They eventually have two children who are both musicians currently, which is rad. One daughter, one son. Her son Jackson is actually married to Meg White from the White Stripes right now. They're married. They play shows together, and that's adorable.
I'm doing your gun hands.
Yeah, and
I'm pointing. The audience can't see us right now, but you're pointing.
I'm pointing down at my crotch for some reason.
But you're, like, making, like, a family tree, but the entire tree goes into your crotch.
Into my crotch, because that's where I would welcome the family
tree.
The entire family tree is welcome there.
Sense. Right in your crotch.
Not at once. That's gross.
No, because it's a family.
It's a family. Let's separate them.
You gotta separate
them. So after marrying and having children, she found time to relax and settle in with her family. She kind of, like, went off the map. They lived in Detroit. But while she was there in Detroit, she began writing more, you know, trying to compose some books. They were always put on the back burner because she was a family person. But, unfortunately, Fred died in 1994, and because of the love that they had shared, she felt lost, and she felt confused, and she didn't know what to do because she had been taking this hiatus for so long. She had recently also lost Robert. She's like, the only two people I've ever really trusted and loved in this world are gone. But it brought her back to her music. She got back up with Lenny Kay. And they reformed the Patti Smith Group. Lenny Kay's still with her today, by the way,
awesome.
Which is just great. So she made 10 albums since 1994, one of which she actually covered Smells Like Teen Spirit because she was really affected by Kurt Cobain's death. She was very touched by that. She felt very connected to that. And it was beautiful.
Love it.
Love it.
Love it.
It's very Patti Smith. If you've ever heard the cover of Smells Like Teen Spirit.
I'm not going to lie. I love a good cover of Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Oh, my God. It is so Patti Smith. We can't play it here because we're not rich yet.
We can't afford this kind of royalties.
But also since then, so 10 albums, 20 books, over 20 books, over 20 books.
My hands are cramped just thinking about it.
I know. Since 94, she's like, done
I typed
10 albums.
One page on one person.
I don't know
person.
How we do it.
I don't know how we do it.
But anyway, so one of them is Just Kids, which I talked about. The other is M Train. She talks about a vacation she took with Fred, and it's just beautiful. But nothing beats Just Kids, and I'm so sorry, Patty. You always know. It's your first love, you know. So her music has been used in movies and TV for years. My favorite is Natural Born Killers. Best, like, scene of any movie that's ever...
I have not seen that movie in years, and I'm going to have to watch it again
Oh, my God. They're in the car, and they're driving, and it's very psychedelic and weird, and then that song's playing in the background, and you're just like, I know they're going to fuck shit up! In 2007, this is my favorite part of this whole thing. In 2007, she was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and she was named the High Priestess of Punk Poetry.
That's amazing!
Isn't that beautiful?
Yes.
I think that's so beautiful. And it's so fucking fitting. She's been an advocate for anti-war efforts, and she's shown support for whistleblowers such as Julian Assange.
Yes.
And she's also protested for better treatment of prisoners who are in prison for nonviolent drug-related crimes. Pot dealers and...
You know, people that shouldn't be there.
People that shouldn't be in prison. Anyways, now some fun facts.
Fun facts!
I'm going to do them real quick. Boom, okay. Boom, boom. So, when she first moved to New York City, she was obsessed with Allen Ginsberg. Obsessed with him. So, she's, like, sleeping out on the streets, like I had mentioned. And he sees her, and he's like, let me buy you something. Let me take you to a coffee shop. I'll buy you, like, a little croissant and some coffee. Years later, they're friends. And it's because of this that he, Allen Ginsberg, was finally able to open up and be like, you know the reason I found you on the streets and bought you food and drink and whatnot?
Yeah.
Is because I thought you were a very pretty young man.
Oh, no! I was so excited. I was like,
uh-uh.
Oh,
Nope. Thought he could get laid that night. Because he was gay and thought she was a dude. But the reason he didn't eventually take her home was because he, inside his head, saw her move a certain way, and her the outline of her tit showed, and he, in his mind, was going, "Tits!" And that's real, true life story.
Oh, no!
Yeah. So, yeah, so she almost accidentally slept with Allen Ginsberg.
A very confused.
He was so confused.
A very confused Allen Ginsberg.
So confused.
The 70s, when everyone was skinny.
This is the 60s, so even worse. So another one, she didn't do drugs. And in fact, the times that she did try to smoke weed, she got so paranoid she locked herself in her hotel room.
Oh, sweet baby.
She tried three times, and every time she's like,
nope.
Somebody is after me, so, and I don't like it.
I love
but
it,
she
though.
She did enjoy she a drink.
Like, but I do love the fact that she was living on the streets
she
in
got
the 60s,
to meet Jimi Hendrix, Grace Slick, and Janis Joplin in the same night at a bar.
That's awesome.
So she was obsessed with the Max's Kansas City bar. If you've not read High on Rebellion, I totally suggest it. It's so good, and it's about Max's Kansas City. Anyways, they kept getting kicked out, her and Robert, because they looked like scum. But, like, they wouldn't even let them in line. They're like, don't even go around this line. Because Andy Warhol used to hang out there with his superstars, and they wanted just so badly to get in there. And they eventually did, and they were like, okay, cool, this was not what I thought.
Oh my god, this is not the Disneyland that
you
thought,
like,
this was.
Hmm. Cool people, sure, but these chickpeas could use a little work. And she was also considered to be the lead vocalist of the Blue Oyster Cult.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the original?
I'm sorry, when you said considered, I thought, like, she was, people consider her the lead vocalist.
Oh, no, no, no.
And I was like, what?
No.
Huh?
No, she was
considered
for. Yes. Yes. And she was like, she had written a bunch of songs for them because she knew them. So she wrote a bunch of songs and they were like, why don't you just be the singer? And she's like, nah.
I good.
No, thank you.
That was great.
And then the last thing, I even put in here, she said nah.
Nah. She said nah. She said nah.
Okay, so this is the last point, and I'm going to get real passionate about this.
I'm ready for passion. I'm ready for passion.
Okay. So she's been portrayed in several movies, all of which were shit. Shitty fucking movies. But if you want to check them out, here they are.
I'm listening.
One is called Mapplethorpe, and it's made for HBO, and it was starring...
So, titties.
No. Okay. Because it's about Robert Mapplethorpe, so lots of dicks, though.
Like, actual, or like... HBO 20 years ago.
I don't know what HBO 20 years ago was like.
Less dick.
No, there's dicks.
Okay.
He was an erotic photographer, so lots of dicks.
Okay. All right, gotcha.
But anyways, it's starring Matt Smith from Doctor Who, which pisses me the fuck off. But anyways, he stars as Robert. And then Marianne Rendon, she's French, I don't know, is playing Patty Smith. She's in the thing for maybe 15 minutes.
Wait.
This huge part of his life is in the movie for maybe 15 minutes.
He meets her, and then she's at his deathbed? Is that all she gets?
Oh, no, not even his deathbed.
What? No. All right, no.
Nope, don't even bother, guys. So then, for 4 fucking seconds, she's in the CBGB movie called CBGB. Please don't watch that movie. So Mickey Sumner plays her, and the facts are wrong about the timing, and the song is wrong that she sang there, and, like, all kinds of bad. This movie stars, you ready to be real sad?
I'm listening.
It stars Alan Rickman and fucking Robert Grint from Harry Potter.
I mean, when was this movie? Because I remember it.
Alan Rickman played Hilly Crystal, the owner of CBGB.
Okay. They talk like this.
I mean, yeah, he's so
he's
Alan
Rickman.
Minus the English accent, he was still Alan Rickman.
Everything was back here.
And then
the
Rupert Grint played Cheetah Chrome. Okay, but here's the thing, though. It really turned me on to Rupert Grint. Like,
you're like,
I would.
I
would. But otherwise, the movie sucked. I put on here, I could not be more upset with the Harry Potter cast. It's like, fuck you guys. Why? Anyways, there are a lot of other stars in the movie, and the movie sucks. That's how I ended that.
So no good movies.
There's no good movies about Patti Smith.
I can be honest with you. I don't think there's any good movies about Avril Shaw. Although there should be. Because,
there's literally
like,
no movie even ever. Mentioning her, probably.
I mean, it was really hard to find stuff about
her. She should
her.
Be in Stranger Things. Wait, that doesn't fit the timing. She's dead before then. Sorry. Yeah.
No,
I'm sorry.
No. Everything it was that in Indiana, I was trying to look up about her, like, I would get on the sites. And I would go to, like, search the page, and it'd be like, sorry, not here. So yeah. The only thing, like, if you want to look up anything about Avril Shaw is you have to go to Indiana.
God damn it, Indiana.
Yeah, Indiana's like, you can, here's Avril Shaw.
They're
She's
just trying
awesome.
To make you visit.
Oh, God, but I don't want to.
They're Except like, but we have James Dean, and we have David Letterman, and
also,
Avril
walk
Shaw.
Through these houses, but I do want to walk through
look
this house.
Look at this unicorn.
Seriously, I want to walk through these houses. I'm going to find the golden unicorn. It's going to be mine.
It's on record.
I said it. It's real.
Hey, why don't you tell me about a badass woman you know?
I am going to tell you about a badass woman I know. So, every week, we're going to tell you guys about a badass woman in our life because women support women and there's a lot of badass women in this world.
We're
going to
do it every month, though. Not every week.
Oh, yeah. Good point. Every month. We're going to tell you about baddest women that we know.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of baddest women in this world, and they affect everyone around them, and they're awesome. I'm going to start with one that is near and dear to my heart. She is my older sister. Her name is Becky. Becky was a huge part of the revival of burlesque in Columbus in the early 2000s. If it were not for her and a lot of her hard work, we wouldn't have the thriving burlesque scene here in Columbus. From the time that I was young to, you know, these days when I'm in my 30s, she's always been someone that I could idolize. And some of the best things about her is that she's always stood up for herself. She's always stood up for the people around her. She's a fucking badass woman. Like I said, she brought burlesque back to Columbus after, you know, its 50-year hiatus. She then chose to focus on her career. After, you know, so many years of burlesque, she was like, I'm going to step back because I have this career that I want to focus on. Well, then she had my beautiful and intelligent and just completely gorgeous nephew. And a few years after having my nephew, she said, you know what? I did the career thing. I want to raise my son. And so she found a way, which I think is fucking phenomenal, to go from, you know, working 40 plus hours a week and being a boss lady to working part-time and making ends meet otherwise and, you know, growing her own garden, making her own food, even as far as making her own kombucha.
Kombucha?
It's
that alcohol tea. Good because, for hangovers.
Good for hangovers.
Thanks, Becky.
But she did all of that so that she could stay home with her son. So she was like, I'm... Kombucha. There we go. We have not had anything to drink tonight.
Oh my God, I've only had one cup of wine.
I made it kind of full. So anyways, she decided, I'm going to give up my, you know, like full-time, super stressful, like business job to a part-time job where I get to work where she loves. And she also gets to spend more time at home. And it's really amazing to watch her go through these different stages in life. And she completely commits to everything that she does. And I think that that makes her a badass woman. Where it's like, when I want to be a badass performer, I'm going to be a badass performer. And when I want to change gears and I want to be a badass boss, I'm going to be a badass boss. And guess what? When I want to change gears and be a mom, I'm going to be a mom. And yeah. I think that that's fucking phenomenal. And she is my badass woman of the month.
Fantastic. And Becky, I miss you.
We'll come and see you.
Please show me your boobs.
That's not weird. Actually, she does plan on coming back. When this podcast comes back, or comes out, she may be coming back to burlesque for the first time.
Oh, that's the most exciting news I've heard in, like, years.
Yeah. She is working on getting back into burlesque. She wants to perform again now that she's not a super stressed out business lady.
Love it. Uh-huh. Speaking of performer boss-ass bitches, I'm going to tell you about my woman of the month.
Woman of the month.
They should get, like, gold stars with their picture.
Like, I like it.
Let's just, like, make it real cheesy.
Oh, my God. Like, with, like, a little bit of, like, white glow on
and
their
like,
faces.
And, like, it's like a wall of fame.
Oh, I love it.
I think that's a great idea.
You
we'll have, like,
on
Oscars.
Instagram. Enjoy that.
Let's find the most unflattering photo of them.
Oh, yeah. No, I want one where they look beautifully unbeautiful.
I love it. But it's going to be hard for us because they're both really beautiful women.
They're beautiful women.
So my woman of the month is going to be my dear friend, Athena Nile.
Womp womp.
She is beautiful, and she has no idea that I'm picking her, because I'm not going to tell her until this podcast comes out.
She's going to be like, oh my God.
What the fuck? What the fuck? So Athena Nile is a belly dancer here in Columbus, Ohio. She travels around all over the place. She does weddings for people. She makes the most beautiful costumes I've ever seen in my life.
I don't know when she finds the time. They're gorgeous.
They're
so
detailed.
I see her posting like constantly. They're gorgeous.
So detailed. And so jingly.
So jingly.
She's the glitteriest human being I've ever met.
Oh my God, yeah.
She is a businesswoman. She knows how to run a show. She knows how to tell men to fuck off, okay?
In the most beautiful way possible. Like, God, love her.
I love her.
Love her.
I love her. So one time we were at a show. I'm not going to name the venue, but we were in the dressing room, and owner of said venue was in the dressing room and was, like, with another dude in the dressing room while we were all trying to, like, do our makeup and kind of subtly hint, like, hey, get the fuck out. We're trying to get undressed and dressed again.
Just because we're getting undressed on stage doesn't mean you get to be backstage.
Nope. And they were just very chauvinistic and very, I'm fairly certain one was a skinhead, but I could be totally wrong about that. I don't want to peg that on anyone, but likely. Anyways, somebody had gone out, another beautiful woman, Femi LaFreak. Good job, Femi.
Ding, ding.
Ding, ding. Came out and was like, hey, Athena, dudes are in the back kind of being fucking idiots. Can you do something about it? She comes back, and, like, you can tell she had talked to them. Her face is a little pink, and she comes back just like nothing happened. Like, do-do-do-do-do. But they were not in the room anymore. They were not there.
Nothing happened. There was no
conversation. She fucked them up. I don't know what she did, but she fucked them up. She also does a lot of, like, fundraisers with her belly dance troupe. She's just an all-around great person. She's traveled with our shitty-ass band. We're not shitty.
There was nothing shitty about
our
band.
No. And by that I meant we had shitty shows in which we had taken her. And she...
Vivian, there are no little shows, just little people.
People? That too, I guess.
I don't think that that's the actual quote.
I don't think so either, but it is now. but anyways, she and her girlfriend Angie have traveled with us on many an excursion, and God love them. They just stick it out. She dances with us. She does fire. She fucking spins fire.
She spins fire, and she balances swords.
And she balances swords.
She's pretty badass.
She's amazing. So that's my woman of the month, Athena, the shiniest human being on the planet.
I think that that
I
is
think
our
that
first,
wraps it up.
I think that's our first episode. So, yeah, ladies. Let's smear lipstick
and raise hell.
Bye. Bye.
Ah!